Okay, good afternoon. I'll call the order of the meeting of the State Government Budget Division for Wednesday, April 7, 2010. We have a quorum present. Sorry for the delay, but we were bumping into the Finance Committee's time this morning as well, too, so we had to postpone this meeting. The first item on our agenda is Senate File 3318. Senator Dibble, this is Energy Improvement Financing Program Provisions and Modification. This is a budget division, so we don't need a whole lot of description about the underlying policy, but if you could just tell us what the bill is about, Senator Dibble, that would help.
Thank you, Chairman Betzold and members, for the opportunity to present Senate File 3318. This bill, members, makes a change to how we finance a program that we established a couple of years ago for the purpose of doing improvements for energy efficiency and conservation measures on public buildings. We have two separate programs we set up, one for local units of government, the other for state government-owned buildings. And we set those up originally under a master lease purchase financing mechanism. We're coming in to change the state buildings financing mechanism to a more traditional financing mechanism. As these projects are conceived and executed, the repayment from them typically comes from and is required to come from the savings in energy that results from the improvements to the buildings. This is a request, a change that's coming from the Department of Administration. It's going to make these projects much more viable. And already, just as the program has been established, it hasn't yet gotten underway, but I understand from Mr. Wazlowski that about 400 buildings are in the queue. We're also going to be taking advantage of federal stimulus dollars to help support these activities. With that, if you'd like some more information, we do have Mr. Wazlowski here to speak more to the change to this program.
And given the fact that we have no cost or revenues or anything on the fiscal note, we probably shouldn't have to go too much deeper than that. Are there any questions, the members? We are trying to track what's going on in the other body as far as having bills moving and figure out what's where. So we've got an A1 amendment, which... This bill is under the Department of Administration, and there's two other provisions that we've already looked at in this budget division that are Department of Administration-related provisions. One is Senator Roebling's bill on disposal of old buildings, and the other was a provision within the governor's bill that simply clarifies a provision under the Workers' Compensation Reinsurance Program, which moves it from the Department of Management and Budget to Administration. As I say, we've already approved these in this bill. We've talked to Senator Dibble, and he's agreed that, you know, he could take these amendments again because we're trying to track this and make sure that we don't lose bills along the way because of the strange mating habits of the other body, so to speak.
Mr. Chair, I will endeavor to represent both of these bills well as they move forward.
And Senator Roebling's not here, but I don't know if we include her in that this is in play here. Okay. So does somebody wish to move the A1 amendment?
I will.
Senator Rust moves the A1 amendment. Discussion on the A1 amendment. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Is there anybody else wants to be heard on Senate File 3318 as now amended? For motion to move the bill to the Finance Committee.
So moved.
Senator Rust moves that Senate File 3318 as amended be recommend passed be referred to the Committee on Finance. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you,
Senator
Dibble.
Mr. Chair, members.
Let's go to the last item on the agenda, Senate File 3329, Senator Latz, Local Impact Notes Request from Finance and Ways and Means Committee Authorization. Senator Latz, welcome to the budget business.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill that you have before you proposes to expand the number of the committee chairs that can make requests for local impact notes from the Department of Management and Budget. The goal is to make it easier to find out what the impact would be of proposed legislation on local governments in Minnesota. It's a transparency issue. It's an issue of knowing what kind of impacts we might be imposing on local governments, if it's an unfunded mandate or whether we should choose to fund it. But at least everyone knows what they're talking about when proposed legislation is accused of imposing an unfunded mandate on local governments. So that's, and then it also changes or expands to whom the local impact note is distributed once it's completed.
To each one.
Okay, and this is apparently the first stop of this bill, so is there anybody who wants to be heard on this, on the bill, on Senate File 325? Ms. O'Rourke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Jennifer O'Rourke. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities, which is a statewide association representing all 800-some cities in the state. We're in full support of this legislation that's before you, and I believe you have a letter in your packets to that effect. We feel this is a pretty simple change, just adding leaders in the House and Senate from the fiscal side of things. Currently, just the tax chairs are the official ones who can request these fiscal notes. You may or may not know, but a lot of our local officials already act as analyzers, if you will, on various pieces of legislation and contribute for the Department of Finance or MMB. The actual local impacts for these notes. So I don't anticipate there would be a lot more work at the local level. I think the group, there's a number of local folks impacted, probably in the neighborhood of 20 to 30 local officials who work with the department.
Okay, any questions of this witness? Now, there is a fiscal note. It shows about $8,000 a year. Of course, you got to wonder how much it costs to prepare the fiscal note. Although we were told to kind of keep our eye on costs, especially when we're cutting everything, I don't know. I'm personally okay with forwarding this on to the Finance Committee, and I see this as fairly nominal. So,
Mr. Chairman, to that point, Scott Simmons from the AMC also has.
Okay, welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Scott Simmons from the Association of Minnesota Counties. I concur with everything that's been said by the bill's author and Ms. O'Rourke to provide some transparency so that the appropriations committees have better knowledge of potential local impacts from bills that they have jurisdiction over. Regarding the local impact note, fiscal note, I should say that the dollars it's our understanding that the dollars to pay for local impact notes come off the top of county program aid. There's $207,000 in the law that's provided for the Department of for Minnesota Management and Budget to do the work of local fiscal impact note analysis, and that comes off the top of program aid. Without a general fund appropriation.
Okay. Any questions? Is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on Senate File 3325? Okay. It's a pleasure. Senator Rust moves that Senate File 3325 be recommended and passed to the Finance Committee. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Let's see. I don't see Senator Rummel, Senator Bonhoff, or Senator Metzen yet. So, Senator Jungbauer, I guess your bill would be up next.
Can we call Rummel, Bonhoff, and Metzen?
And Senator Jungbauer, this is Senate File 1770, Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force Establishment.
Mr. Chair and members, a couple of us on this committee were members of the Commission to End Poverty by 2020, and this is kind of an extension of that. We came up with some great suggestions to move things forward in terms of Minnesota and in terms of eliminating poverty. The Ladder Out of Poverty Task Force just kind of keeps something alive to make sure that these things are front and center and people are working on them. It does have a small fiscal note. We've been trying to figure out ways to totally eliminate the fiscal note. And from the my personal standpoint, members, it seems kind of interesting that legislators aren't allowed to serve on things without getting compensated in terms of these types of things where we could pick and choose. And I guess if there was a way to accomplish that, I would like to accomplish that because I know that I serve on public boards and things that with no compensation, and I choose to do those things as well because they're things that I believe in and things I want to move forward. So this is one thing that I'm very passionate about, working on these poverty issues and making sure it stays front and center. So I guess we had Greg Hubinger could talk about it. Here we go.
Mr. Yee,
Greg, I didn't see you there.
Yeah, welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Greg Gibbinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Mr. Chair, our office prepares fiscal notes on bills that have a fiscal impact on the operations of the legislature. And the fiscal note that you have distributed to you reflects in part the cost to the legislature of paying per diems and reimbursing the expenses of members who are attending meetings of this task force. It's become clear to us that the proponents of this legislation are collaborating to continue the work of the Poverty Commission and trying to do that within the severe financial restraints of the state budget. Within that premise, the interest groups have agreed to participate in the work of this task force without actually being members, so that they are not eligible to receive per diems, and that they are also offering to provide financial support for the publication or for the other costs of that of this working group, such as preparing reports and printing them. The policy issue for this division, then, is whether House and Senate members can also collaborate and participate in this task force without being reimbursed for their expenses.
Well, we actually had a similar discussion this morning in the Senate Finance Committee. As Senator Frederickson pointed out, members from the immediate metro area have less costs for attending meetings at the Capitol, but members from greater Minnesota, I mean, do incur costs, to drive in and stay overnight and so forth. And you don't want to have it set up so that there's no reimbursement, because that basically excludes members from the greater Minnesota. So I think this is one of those issues. As long as most of the costs are coming out of the legislative budgets, that's almost something that I think the leadership of both bodies can kind of get a handle on. If they want to start putting limits on, per diem and so forth during the interim, I guess they can do that, so we can – I suspect we could just move this on and just see, just how people at another level, want to handle per diem. But that's most of the cost here is the per diem for legislators, right? So,
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And, Mr. Chair, members, actually, we had, I think there's an amendment that would clarify something further in terms of that. But
is there an A4 amendment? Okay.
And also, it's interesting to note that the author in the House is from Moorhead, and he is willing to do this without per diem as well. So,
I think it's kind of hard to force people who don't live in the area to work without any reimbursement, right? Senator Pappas.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just heard a rumor going around that there was a possible way of dealing with this was to have this task force meet the same day that there were other legislative activities going on, so that people would be able to avail themselves of, kind of the regular expense and per diems that are available.
Yeah, it looks like that's what the A4 amendment does.
Oh, okay.
There it is.
And maybe that's something that can be discussed. Obviously, we all have different schedules, but, if you could kind of identify certain days out of the month when it'd be kind of nice to have people come on in and get as many meetings out of the way as possible.
That would be nice.
That wouldn't be a bad idea. So, Sarah Rust.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's also instructive to consider some of the comments in the Rules Committee where this bill was heard with a lot of other task force bills, which is why I happened to be in the room and heard the discussion of the Rules Committee. And Senator Pogemiller made the point, which I thought was well, is that when members of the legislature are appointed to something, they are not there representing themselves. They're representing the body that appointed them. And so the people who are from the Senate, both the minority and the majority leaders, they're doing an official duty. And the notion And he was not talking about it at, he wondered why you had to have legislators on a committee. But he also made the point that the notion that you expect them to do official duties without the opportunity, at least, nobody has to take per diem, of course, or any expenses, but that you would expect them to do this without the opportunity to take per diem kind of lessens the importance of the task to which they've been appointed. And I think historically we have you know, people can volunteer and not take it or take less or whatever. But to totally wipe it out and say two people will be appointed, but only those people who are willing to pay their own expenses, diminishes the group and it diminishes the institution, because we're putting expectations on people that are not reasonable ones. So I'm kind of reluctant, even when there's a cost, to say, well, we'll do this, but we really don't mean it, right. And cut out the per diem. And that is independent of whether I think this task force is a good idea or not. I mean, it may, you know, I know that Senator Jungbauer is an extreme enthusiast for it, but I think that it has to be recognized as this is something that has the imprimatur of the Minnesota Senate, and it's not a volunteer activity on your own time.
So the fiscal note doesn't contemplate per diem to be paid, and that's just the discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Sarah Pappas.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Hubinger, what kind of responsibilities does the LCC have here in terms of this task force, and does it result in more cost or more work to your organization?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, the costs or work for us is minimal for this proposal.
It
would just be absorbed.
You're convening it, and that's about it.
The cost would be to the two bodies, apparently. Mr. Bonner has a technical amendment on the A4 amendment. Mr. Bonner?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hubinger brought to my attention that the way the amendment is worded right now, you'll see on the first line it says delete from the task force. So the sentence that remains would say members must serve without compensation or payment of expenses. He pointed out quite rightly that would preclude any compensation or payment of expenses. Perhaps it would be best to reword this a little bit. And I think one way to do that, on page 2, line 29, after expenses, insert except as provided in this paragraph. And then I think you can leave the amendment as is, so that the new language would read, members of the task force serve without compensation or payment of expenses except as provided in this paragraph, and then to the extent possible, meetings shall be scheduled on dates when they could.
Okay. And, Sanjong, Bauer, you incorporate that, I take it?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So is there a discussion on the A4 amendment with that modification? Sanjong Bauer moves the A4 amendment as modified. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Okay. Is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on Senate File 1770 as amended? Okay, seeing none, Senator Jungbauer moves to Senate File 1770 as amended be recommended past the Finance Committee. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we have three bills that actually, I think they're all kind of all similar. Is that correct? Senator Romo, are you a part of the other? No, you're separate. Okay. Why don't you do Senator Bonhoff and Senator Metzen? Senator Metzen, we'll do yours first because apparently you've got a plan to roll yours into Senator Bonhoff's bill. Senator Metzen, welcome to the Budget Division.
Thank you very much.
Senate File 1880.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we're trying to resuscitate a bill here, Senate File 1880, to recreate the Board of Innovation and Cooperation. We're not glued to that term, but for lack of another one at this point, we'll go with that. But quite frankly, I think society is being asked to do more with less. It's only reflected on all the state budgets around and the national budget. I think that's part of what – I don't think that's part of what this bill does. It tries to do more with less. We had this Board of Legislation Innovation Operation a few years ago. I thought it accomplished quite a bit. let me give you a couple of examples. For example, Hutchinson, Minnesota, there was a sand and salt state building, sand and salt county building, there was a city municipality sand and salt building. all within a block or two of one another. And obviously, there's all kinds of front-end loaders and lots of equipment. So the state gave a small grant to Minnesota. Things more effectively, efficiently, and at a cheaper cost. So with a very small grant from the state, they built one building out there, cutting the cost of the products they bought, less equipment, and it goes on and on. And now they have one building in Hutchinson. Another thing in Embro Heights, where I'm from, there were going to be three libraries built. The city, the county, and the Dakota County College.
Sir, could you move your mic a little closer? You're kind of cutting in and out. Okay, thank you.
So what happened is from a small grant from the state, they all worked together, and they ended up building one library on the campus right in the middle of all three. But and also part of the bill, it provided for waivers where you didn't have to jump through all the hoops and loops and to get projects started. So, and also another example I'm using is the cities I come from, South St. Paul and West St. Paul, combine their two fire departments. I mean, geographically, they can handle both communities efficiently and effectively. They have one chief, two deputy chiefs instead of two chiefs and four deputies. And in the long run, it's going to save a lot of money. So this idea, I'd like to take credit for it, but it came from Senator Hottinger and former Senator Hottinger and former Senator Ember Rice got, I know they got that started years ago. But I think this kind of language, along with what Senator Bonnet's going to be visiting with you about, I think would combine and get us going and do things in a better manner and going forward. So,
now, there is a fiscal note, which is considerable. Now, I've been told that Senator Bonhoff and Senator Metz have been working together, and the plan would be to, after we hear Senator Metz's presentation, to lay his bill over. Senator Bonhoff will be discussing her bill because it does tie into this, and there was a delete all amendment which would combine the two bills and, I believe, take care of the fiscal note. But Senator Metz,
and one of the things I failed to add that I've been working, former Senator Reichscott's been working on this thing tirelessly for it seems like forever, but particularly the last couple of years, and I'm going to give her 98% of all the credit that deserved here. But part what we're adding on to this bill is the nonprofits, which will be part of the legislation going forward.
Well, she is here. Former Senator Reichscott Young, did you wish to weigh in on this?
She could. Yeah, that'd be helpful if she could give you a little short.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for the kind comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm here now as...
Identify yourself for the record.
Okay. Yes, thank you. I'm here as... my name is Ember Reichscott Young, and I'm here as... you forget quickly after a decade. I'm here as Vice President and Chief Advancement Officer for Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota. What I would just simply say is that the previous bill that Senator Metzen talked about, the Government Board of Innovation and Cooperation, was in effect in the state of Minnesota from 1993 to 2002 when it was eliminated due to lack of funding. The notion here is to scale it up and to look at ways that we can bring in broader constituencies to work with government and the partnerships of business and nonprofit and foundations. The other purpose is to scale it up in a way that broadens it out with many other really great ideas that have come through the process. As it turns out, there's about four or five different bills with regard to innovation, collaboration, and boards. And so the request of me was simply to offer ideas to how we can combine all of these great ideas into one bill. And so Senator Bonhoff and Senator Metzen have taken the lead in that regard, and I would just yield to them and then answer whatever questions may arise in this process.
Okay, just focusing on Senator Metzen's bill, is there any questions or anybody else wants to be heard on that? So if none, I'll set this one aside. And Senator Bonhoff, then you've got your bill, but then a proposal to merge some of Senator Metzen's bill into your bill. So, okay. So the other bill we've got is Senate File 2620, Service Innovation Commission Establishment. Senator Bonhoff, welcome to Budget Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So before we talk about that,
Perhaps somebody would be willing to move the delete all so that we could have
why don't
that.
Why don't you describe what you're trying to do, since it's been heard by the policy committees, we have to understand what the delete all does before we can adopt it. So you have to explain that. So.
Very good, Mr. Chair, members. The delete all simply combines both bills. So there are very little changes to the bill that you had before you. For example, we added the Council on Nonprofits in the membership section, and we added a few more specific deliverables in terms of what we'd be looking for the Commission on Service Innovation to produce. Other than that, what this delete all does is combines the bill that Senator Metzen talked about, and we did take the liberty of stripping out the finance. And the way we did that is we gave the Board of Innovation the opportunity to raise private funds for grants, should they choose to do so, as well as to raise private funds for staff. The bill that is the Commission on Service Innovation portion of that never did have a fiscal note. I did get that fiscal note, and it was zero. And the reason for that is simply because we are using outside members to be this commission. And just to refresh members' memory, the purpose of this commission is to bring forth the best and the brightest minds in all the various sectors that interface with the government and that have some role in providing government services, and give them a very discrete task. And that task is to create a strategic plan between the end of session and the beginning of next year, whereby they put forward a set of policy recommendations for how we might maximize efficiency in the delivery of services.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify, Senator Bonhoff's bill had a zero cost to it, and so, Mr. Bonner, the way that the cost in the A3 amendment is dealt with is just, it's just not apparent. It's just the appropriation isn't there. Is that what
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And Mr. Chairman, also, we went in and used various at points in the bill to refer to being able to solicit private funds.
Okay, I'm just trying to find that.
I'd like to know where that is.
Mr. Chairman, there are several places where the delete everything does that. On page 2, beginning on line 7, the Commission on Service Innovation, and this is similar to what was seen in Senate File 2620, has the authority to solicit and receive private contributions. The changes here basically run that money through a special revenue account and then appropriate it to the commission. And then if you look at the very end of the Delete Everything Amendment on page 14, for the Board of Innovation, this authority did exist in the original legislation. It's got authority to charge a fee. Those proceeds are then appropriated to the board, and paragraph B authorizes the board to accept gifts and grants with the same treatment.
Okay.
Senator Metzen and Senator Bonhoff, in a couple of other proposals, and I'm not sure if Senator Ramos had that, but there is the yes. You have a reference to on page 4, line 21, that a member of the board be from Ask Me Council 5, and in other discussions where Ask Me is invited to be a member, it's been pointed out that there are two major councils, and one of them is Metro, and one of them is non-Metro, and the non-Metro one is Council 65, so that there are two representatives from AFSCME, one from Council 5 and one from Council 65, and I wonder whether that kind of geographical distribution is meaningful within the context of this bill or whether you feel like it's not.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ress, I think there's a mistake because in the amendment that was originally to be included with the CSI bill that Mr. Bottom was going to just take all the parts and include them. Oh, here it is. Senator Ress, on page one. I'm sorry. On page one, I do have one from Council 5 and one from Council 65.
That's
but I
CSI,
think
CSI, but not on the Board of Innovation.
Right. So very. So you're speaking about the second part of the bill, and now I'll defer to Senator Metzen. Yes.
I think that geographically that would really make some sense.
I don't know whether we could incorporate that change for the delete everything amendment going forward, but I would be willing to offer the delete everything amendment and then incorporate a change that would start on 331, consists of 16 members appointed as follows, and then on on 421 to say, to repeat the language from
1.24.
Lines 123 and 124, so that would read two members of the of AFSCME, including one from Council 5 and one from Council 65. So I'd like to incorporate that in the delete all amendment.
Okay, that can be incorporated. Okay,
thank you
is there
very much.
Anybody else who wants to be heard? We have the A3 amendment here to Senate File 2620. Is there anybody else who wants to be heard on it? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonhoff, on the A3 amendment, the commission itself, I guess the question I have is what would prevent this group of individuals or organizations from creating their own commission? Why is the legislature needing to be involved in it at all?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, going back to what the mission of this group is, we right now have a structural budget deficit for the foreseeable future. And we've had that now for some time. This will be my fifth year, and every year we talk about that, and we have different ways of dealing with that. But to this point, we've not solved the problem, and I have remained convinced that one big part of solving that problem is to realign the way we deliver government services so that we lower the fixed costs of government. It hasn't happened. That commission's not out there. But I will tell you that when I put this idea forward, it wasn't just by myself. I was out there having conversations with key business leaders. I had breakfasts, I had lunches, I called people on the phone, and everybody who I spoke to became enthusiastic about sitting on this. One of their concerns, though, and I'll be frank with you, is in the past we've had these high-powered commissions and then the legislature and the governor don't implement the recommendations. And so that concern, again, was raised. So number one, I would say in answer to you, I think they would think it would be a waste of their time because we wouldn't listen to them. Number two, we still have that concern with regard to this, and I think having it have this kind of high-level discussion and be on the record gives us some chance and encouragement of being willing to listen to it, as well as that we have our chief information officer as part of the commission because we do have some stake in it. But so number one, I think the situation is grave. Number two, I think the time to act is now before we have the next governor, before that governor steps into office, so that we can at least propose some recommendations that begin that process of shrinking the cost of government. And why not have a legislator sitting in this group? Because, frankly, I think it's better to depoliticize it as much as humanly possible.
Any further discussion on the A3 amendment as modified? Seeing none, Senator Rust moves the A3 amendment as modified. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rust.
On the page 5, we have steered away from talking about making recommendations to the legislature as an entity and try to make recommendations to legislators of various committees. And I see here that we're going back to talking about making recommendations, certainly to the governor. That works.
It's page 5, line 13.
Well, starting with 5-4 and then 5-7 and 5-13. And I wondered if there's a way that we could talk about or change that so that without getting too wordy, that you pick somebody to make the recommendations to, and even to the point of saying, of combining 4, 5, and 7, and saying make recommendations to the chairs and ranking minority members of the House and the Senate with jurisdiction over
probably the appropriate legislative committees.
The appropriate legislative committees, yes. And then say what 4 is, what 5 is, and then 7 does have 3, or actually has 6 different points. And it's a kind of a stylistic thing, and I don't have it written, obviously, but I do think it's important that people get these reports rather than it being sent to the Legislative Reference Library, which is what happens when a report is, quote, sent to the legislature, because there's no place for it to go in particular. I don't know how hard that is to change that in there, but I wonder if Mr. Bodern could help us out.
Well,
with
given
that.
The fact that the recommendations could be anywhere, it could go to any committee. You know, so I think we have to have it.
It could be a generalized thing, though.
Yeah.
Couldn't it be to the appropriate committees?
I suspect so. Mr. Bonner, do you have any thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, I think you can put that general instruction in there, and basically it's telling the board that it must then determine which specific committees are necessary. So the amendment would read on page 5, lines 4, 7, and 13, delete the legislature and insert to the chairs and ranking minority members of the appropriate legislative committees.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, thank you. I think this makes it more clear and a more targeted place for these recommendations to go. So I think
you've
got
it. Mean that somebody, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman,
yes, absolutely.
Some actual person would be getting the recommendation.
And I agree. Thank you for suggesting that.
Madam, Mr. Chairman, maybe I'm just more used to this because of serving on this committee and Senate Rest Committee, but it just seems to me we shouldn't still be having this happen anymore. That, you know, unless this was drafted in the other body.
Time,
oh, okay. So it hasn't been seen a more recent review.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, no, I think this bill was introduced and discussed in the Business and Jobs Committee a year ago.
Yeah, it's a lower number or something. Okay, is there discussion on Senator Rest's motion?
I can hear of it
quite a while ago.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Discussion on Senator Rest's motion for amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion fails. The amendment's adopted. Sarah Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if there's a little bit of a conflict of interest possible, because in current law, if somebody wants to get a waiver, they go to the state auditor, but now that's being repealed in here. And they would be coming to the Board of Innovations. And it for example, it has to do with the union representation on the board probably more than anything, because on page 8, line 30, it says that if union members who are affected don't want the waiver, that they need to inform the board. But then the board will vote on whether or not the waiver is granted, but the board includes members of the union.
Which page are you looking at?
Eight.
Page 8, line 3.
3.0. And so I don't know if they would be exempting themselves from voting, or if that is any kind of a conflict that, you know, their union group may be coming to them saying, we don't like this, we don't want this waiver. And now instead of the state auditor making that decision, this board, which includes union members, is going to be making the decision.
I don't know. Of course, keep in mind there'll be 16 members of the board, but Senator Metz, I guess this is more Senator Metz's bill.
Senator Rice got to.
Senator Rice.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, excellent question. The waiver provisions of this bill were very robust in the time the board was here, and many waivers were granted, and the legislature then came and actually ratified them in certain cases. Then the waivers authority went to the state auditor, but in a very limited form. It's hardly being used anymore. So it does exist now, but that's why you're repealing this very limited form and putting back into law what was the more robust form. Now, to your conflict of interest question, the Commissioner of Administration, for example, might have an interest in an issue about a waiver. And let's say they deny that. They say, no, we don't want that waiver. Then it goes to the entire board. But the Commissioner of Administration is also on the entire board. So it would be another instance where there's many people on this board that might be affected by these waivers. And so it wouldn't be different in that regard than in the past where they all made a decision together. But in the past, there could be waivers that were in a Department of Human Services, and they were involved with the board. So it's a way to get, shall we say, a second look at it when one person may not like it. Do you see what I'm saying? And so it would not be different than what in the past occurred when one commissioner didn't like a waiver request or something else. So I'm just saying it'd just be a little bit different twist on it.
Well, if you look at the top of page 8, it said if a member of the board is also a commissioner or designee or the state auditor is employed, the member must not participate in the decision.
Yeah, good.
That's it.
Of the particular waiver.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you.
So then, Mr.
So yeah, go ahead.
So then, Mr. Chairman, you'd probably want to have the same language apply to any of the new members. And remember, the union members are being added to the original language. So hopefully, that could apply.
It would. Yeah.
Well, the limitation at the top of page 8 only applies to the commissioner, the designee, the state auditor, or is employed by an agency. I think Senator Roebling's point is the fact that at line 8.30 talks about the bargaining units can object, but that doesn't mean that the if there's a representative of the board that happens to be part of that bargaining unit, they would not have to be told they can't participate either. I mean, if say AFSCME, for instance, objects, but you've got an AFSCME member of the board, it might be more appropriate to just say that if the board member, you know, is affected by the application, you know, then they can't, all of them, nobody can participate, any member, not just the
ones. Mr. Chair, that's a fairness thing, and I think you're right. Absolutely correct.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, the people who are appointed by AFSCME from the two councils have to be employees of the state or the county or somebody.
Presumably.
So that can't be their agent, I mean, like a union representative. It has to be an employee, somebody who is usually working in a job for a public entity.
Right. And you're raising a good point because the limitation at the top of page 8 only applies to certain members of the board, but you're right, Senator Roebling, because you may have, say, AFSCME might be the bargaining unit objecting to it, and they've got AFSCME members in the board, but the language that we have before us doesn't say that they cannot participate. So I think we would probably need an amendment to say that, you know, any board member that's affected by the by the ruling cannot participate in the waiver exemption. So I think you've raised a very good point here. So maybe Mr. Bonner can kind of figure out how to make that work. So,
Mr. Chair, just a question on that point. Thank you. When we see online 8.2, or is employed by an agency with jurisdiction over a rule or law affected by an application, wouldn't that include it then? Doesn't that?
It might. An agency, though, strikes me as being a state agency.
And it could.
And this could be a local government issue.
Oh,
so they
gotcha.
Might be able to say that, you know, it doesn't apply to them.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And if it's AFSCME, it might be a local government.
Let's make it clear.
That's fine. I think it makes it better.
I think we can spend a minute or two and have some draft language here.
While he's working on that. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit more about the relationship between the Commission on Service Innovation and the Board of Innovation? I think I saw in one, bottom of page 5, 535, that the Board of Innovation would review recommendations received from the Commission on Service Innovation. Is it the case? I mean, this is a pretty long delete all amendment. Is it the case that there is some responsibilities of the Service Commission? Of the Commission on Service Innovation to make recommendations to the Board on Innovation? It says that the Board of Innovation must receive them, but where does it say that they? Even like where appropriate, they would make the recommendations to the Board of Innovation. Is that someplace here? I just don't see it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, on page 3.10, recommendations to the Board of Innovation.
I see. Okay. That's the legislative auditor.
Right.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Rest, I think if you look on page 1, line 5, the commission is charged with providing the legislature and the board with a plan.
I see. Okay. It was right.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, one of the reasons why we did combine these two particular commissions, I think if members who were on the Rules Committee heard that that was a request, and Senator Rest, you had asked to see which of these could go together, it seemed like this happened to be a particularly good fit because there's a beginning, a middle, and an end in some sense of this commission to come up with a plan, and then it seemed as though what Senator Metzen is bringing forward and Senator Ember Reichscott-Young is bringing forward is something that would then provide a structure for ongoing reform and redesign, and so that we could take whatever we come up with in part one, phase one, so to speak, and make those recommendations, and then there could be a structure to implement.
Senator Rush.
With regard to, the plan that you're developing that will be going forward to wherever is sunsetted. I mean, it is
yes.
a specific comes to an end.
Yes, it does.
Which is why
Mr. Chair, Senator
Rest.
So it makes
its recommendations by June 30th of 2012, and then its work is deemed
done.
Completed.
Yes.
And the Board of Innovation and all then starts to receive and deal with whatever recommendations are appropriate to come to it. And it is ongoing. Senator Metzen either does not sunset or did you put a sunset in it for an opportunity for review? And Mr. Botter,
maybe
sunset,
Mr. Botter
knows.
No, there's no sunset.
I think there's a sunset.
And so does it since the sunset is automatic, is there a provision that exempts it from the sunset rule?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, I don't think this would be covered under the existing statutory general sunset. It's not considered an advisory group because of the authority that the board possesses.
So we don't need to exempt it.
Correct.
Yeah, it's the advisory groups that have caused the problem because long after their usefulness is gone, they're still there. They're still there. Yeah, so.
Or they haven't met for years.
Yeah. Kind of. That's true.
No, it is true.
A lot of that.
We've had that. So, Mr. Bonner, did you have anything on the issue on page 8 on the conflict yet?
Mr. Chairman, I think the best way to handle this would be creating a new paragraph that would address the conflict of interest. On page 3, we'll just need to make, after membership, insert coding for paragraph A. And then on page 4, after line 26, a new one-sentence paragraph B that I think captures the concept. You could say, a board member may not vote on a determination under sections 5 to 7, and I think I've captured the relevant decisions there, if the appointing authority for the member has a direct interest in the request. Or in the determination, excuse me.
Could you just repeat the sentence?
Sure. The new paragraph B on page 4 after line 26 would read, a board member may not vote on a determination under sections 5 to 7 if the appointing authority for the member has a direct interest in the determination.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make that motion.
Okay. Senator Rust moves the language as read by counsel. Is there discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
You know, with in both panels, there's close to two-thirds of the panels are members of the public employment sector. So would they be excused from making decisions on this in light of this change in the amendment?
Well, of course, it'd have to be a direct interest, and I'm not quite sure. I mean, a myriad of issues could come up before this group, but to have one issue having a direct interest to everybody, boy, that I suppose it could happen. It seems
maybe
at least sort of
maybe, Mr. Chairman, that my concern of the makeup of these commissions needs to be addressed later after this particular amendment is considered, but in looking over the makeup, at least in Senator Bonoff's Commission on Service Innovation, two-thirds, 66% of the members are of the public employment sector. Nonprofits represent 22%, and the business, private business represents 11%.
Sure.
And in the other proposal on the commission, 40% of the membership is in public. The legislative members make up another 26. If you wanted to group those together under mm-hmm. public employment, that would be 66. But I personally don't put legislators under a public employment sector. And then nonprofits are 26%. And then, of course, business, they get a whopping 6% representation on these boards. So
sure. Well, these are two different – Senator Bonoff's commission – on service innovation mm-hmm. is different from Senator Metzen's board on innovation, and Senator Metzen's board on innovation is the one that has the provision for the conflict of interest. And, of course, the conflict of interest can come up in almost any instance, but I think we were concerned about this board of innovation since they have some broad authorities and grant authorities and so forth that we didn't want to have a conflict of interest affecting how they were going to be making their recommendations here. So the conflict of interest only applies to the Board of Innovation. Senator Roebling, you have a comment?
Well, I just wanted to make sure I understood how the amendment would work. So a board member couldn't vote on a waiver process in particular if whoever appointed them had a direct – what was the word?
Direct interest.
Direct interest. So that would mean, like, if somebody's job was on the line of the group that appointed them, that would be a direct interest. Like, if the waiver included a merger, for example, I mean, that's what I want to make sure that we can do mm-hmm. without having people being too self-protective of things, because then we'll never get anything changed. And so I'm hoping that is clear enough that we can't have people who are going to be affected by this representing certain groups having a major say in determining if the waiver will be granted.
Well, as I read it, I think having the conflict being with the appointing authority, not with the member, because the individual member can say, well, I personally have no interest in this. But if I was appointed by, as an example, AFSCME, and, you know, this affects something local, I mean, then there would be a conflict, not with maybe with the individual member, but with the group that appointed them. And I think that that's what we really have to be sensitive about. So I think that, you know, I think it's a broader view of conflict of interest, but probably more appropriate here. So I think so. Senator Olsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't see the concern that Senator Limmer has there, because I only count four, at least on the service innovation, I only count like four union representatives there. The rest are like the Association of Minnesota Counties and the cities. I mean, if we're talking about people that are going to look at changing delivery systems, who better than somebody from the AMC or LMC to be a part of that? I mean, that's – so I don't have – I guess I don't share the same concern that you do.
Is there any further discussion on Senator Rust's motion to adopt the language as read by counsel on the conflict of interest? Further discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, motion prevails and amendment is adopted. Okay. Further discussion on the bill. Is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on Senate File 2620 as amended? Motion. Senator Rust?
Yep.
Senator Rust moves that Senate File 2620 as amended be recommended passed be referred to the Committee on Finance. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails.
No.
Thank you, Senator
Very
Metzen.
Much,
thank you, Senator Bob.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yep. Thank you. Senator Rummel, this is Senate File 2496, Policy Innovation and Research Task Force. Senator Rummel.
Can't spend money.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2496 is a bill that establishes a workforce on policy research. I affectionately call it the Smart Government Bill. The purpose of the bill is to set up, it takes the first step in creating a sustainable relationship between policymakers in the Minnesota Legislature and our research community. As was illustrated in the One Minnesota Day, there is widespread agreement that policy-based on rigorous, independent research has a better chance of serving our public well than policy that lacks that foundation. When it comes to setting up priorities for the state and acting on those priorities through long-range or strategic planning, which we just heard about, solid grounding in rigorous research is essential. We already have a number of models out there in other states as well as in Minnesota. Our Office of the Legislative Auditor and the LCCMR are two examples of a relationship between the legislature and our research communities. And my participation with both of those groups, the authority and the credibility that that brings to policy that comes before us, helps us jumpstart, helps us move more quickly. I think one of the reasons the environmental bills in Minnesota have done so well is because, thanks to the LCCMR, we have good research that moves us forward. And I won't go into it, my entire presentation from the other time, because many of you were in that committee. What this bill does is it creates a small task force, and it's, you know, I'll point out this is different from what you just heard about. This is just a relationship between the legislature, between us as policymakers, and the research community. So it does not interfere with different branches of government. It's shaped much like our Office of the Legislative Auditor. On the one hand, the legislature proposes major issues that it wants to look at more closely. There's a clean or a bright line between the legislature and the if the commission ever gets established, there would be a clean line between the research community and the legislature, so that would keep it completely independent, non-political, at a great deal of credibility. So it proposes a tax force that will propose a model that generates the legislative priorities. In other words, how do we get to the questions? The task force will describe the structure and the operations of the research side of that relationship. It will also outline the steps that need to be taken in order to implement what I'm calling the Smart Government Bill. And finally, in addition to the The task force will explore the various costs and benefits of linking policymakers to the research community. And I think at that one Minnesota retreat that we went to, we did see some examples where having this close tie with research has saved states significant dollars. Why is this important? Well, as Tom Gillespie often points out, we are moving into a new economy, one that requires us to be more nimble, more flexible, and most of all, more productive. So having ready access to independent, nonpartisan, rigorous research and data is necessary foundation for decision making. And I could go on and on about why this is important. Basically, this is a task force. It has an ending a year from now. I did hear some comments since it's been last heard, and so I've asked Senator Pappas if she would move a couple of amendments that will trim this a little bit.
Okay. Perhaps we can consider them. And I also noticed one or two things that I did not notice when it was heard in the policy committee. The appointing authorities have to complete their appointments no later than August 1st of 2010. However, there's no effective date, so the bill goes into effect on August 1st of 2010. So we may want to have an immediate effective date so that the appointments can be made before then. You're also appointing 8 members of the legislature, and perhaps we can get people like, Senator Dill and Senator Murphy and people like that to serve on it. I think other people who are actually running for re-election might be a little bit busy between August and November, and they may have trouble getting meetings. But that, I don't know. But let's look at the other amendments.
Mr. Chairman, so I can offer for Senator Rummel the A6 and the A7 amendments.
Okay.
I think the A6 should go first.
Okay. Which one did you want to start with?
The A6.
Okay. Okay. While it's being distributed, Senator Pappas, what does the A6 amendment do?
It reduces the number of members on the commission from 14 to 12.
Okay.
By taking away 2 members of the minority, actually, from the Senate and the House. And then it says that instead of the director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance being the chair, it says the task force is going to select their own chair.
And Mr. Chair, in the Rules Committee, I was getting the sense that, well, first of all, this started out as a bill to create a commission, and now it's only a task force. So we thought that by not having a top-heavy legislator versus non-legislator task force, reducing the number of legislators would be okay in this instance, because they're going to simply serve for a few months and come up with a plan. So we're trying to do 2 things: balance the participation in terms of legislative, non-legislative, and also shrink the fiscal note even a little bit more. As you discussed earlier with Senator Jungbauer, there is the provision for per diem for legislators.
Did the Rules Committee address the total number of members on it, whether it's, the numbers from the majority minority? Did they talk about that at all? Or is this, okay, so you didn't get any guidance on that?
All I got from the discussion is that I thought I heard Senator Pogemiller say that, he spends a lot of his time just making appointments. And the other thing I heard some members of that committee say is that, a lot of legislators.
Sure.
But they did not make any recommendations, so I just...
Okay. Is there a discussion on the A6 amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Oh, we're on the
A6. The A6 amendment.
A6. What would be the reason for reducing the minority members of the House and Senate from this panel?
It was just a number of the bills had just 3 from the House and 3 from the Senate, and so we just followed that pattern. It isn't a final commission. It's a task force that lasts 6 months.
But, Mr. Chair, we're also retaining 2 members of the Senate and House that are appointed by the majority. Is that correct?
Now, we could do this any way you want. This was the easiest way we could reduce the numbers.
Senator Limmer, I think that the rationale for that is to make sure that one of the members was a member of the Finance Committee, and then the other is could be any of us. But I don't know why it couldn't be. You couldn't reduce it to one member each, mm-hmm. but to specify, Senator Rummel, that the member appointed by the majority leader must serve on the Finance Committee. Yeah. I think that might, and then a member appointed by the minority leader, or alternately, not make that designation and just have one member appointed by the majority leader, and if he chooses to make that a member of the Finance Committee, that would be up to him. What would you prefer?
Well, I don't know if we need a member from the Finance Committee from both the House and the Senate. So I think folks who serve on the Finance Committee do have a much better understanding than certainly I do about how things happen here in the Senate, how we fund things. And so I think somebody who has the knowledge of the Finance Committee is really critical. Whether we need one from the House and one from the Senate, I don't know. The people that are interested in this, people like Senator Mimoy, I don't think she's on the Finance Committee, but this is a kind of something she and I have been working on together. I don't know what I'd take your recommendation.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think if a member of the Finance Committee is really interested in doing this, they need to make their case.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody's not on the Finance Committee, they need to make their case. And so I would support an amendment that said one member of the Senate appointed by the majority leader, one member of the Senate appointed by the minority leader. One member of the House of Representatives appointed by the Speaker, one member of the House appointed by the minority leader, and you would get both bodies and majority and minority party, so that legislators are not going to overwhelm this group at this point. And it doesn't mean that other people can't come again, but it's not a particular responsibility of theirs. And I think that Senator Pogue-Miller kept saying that. Mm-hmm. Whereas these four people, it is their responsibility mm-hmm. to be at these meetings.
Technically, we have Senator Pappas's amendment before us. So I got it. Senator Pappas.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I guess I don't feel real strongly. I think the rationale is more in proportion to the members in terms of the majority and the minority. It's roughly mm-hmm. 2-1. It's probably not quite 2-1. So I think that is appropriate in terms of the representation. However, you know, in many ways, if there are members of the minority that are willing to serve on this task force, so be it. I think we can operate in a very bipartisan manner in this case. So I don't feel super strongly about it. And I would agree with Senator Ress that although Finance Committee members may offer something, I think it shouldn't be at the expense of people who have a passion and really want to serve. So, well, Senator Rummel, would you like me to alter this amendment then?
Well, my preference would be for the three. I see it as an equal relationship between the research community and the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And as you know, the next amendment is going to add another layperson
right.
to it.
Right. So then, Mr. Chairman, what is your desire in terms of the
only
one member of the committee on finance? Mr. Chairman, I might change my amendment slightly.
Sure.
I'd like to hear just what Senator Rummel wants to do, and maybe I could make
sure.
one small change.
Okay.
Senator Rummel, what about the committee on finance member? Do you want to keep that?
I'm neutral on that. I think one of the things that I've been working on this for 3 years. And the finances is always the difficult part.
All right, well, let's just leave it. Let's just go with the A6 amendment as is. I'll move the A6 amendment.
Of course, that is subject to amendment. If
subject to amendment, that's right.
Subject to amendment. So, Russ, did you wish to offer an amendment to the A6 amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
That's how I
how I stated it. I think that shows respect for the equal participation in a group like this, which I'm not sure should reflect the percentages in the two bodies. And I think those kinds of commissions and task force, and I think the Legislative Audit Commission in particular, were equal numbers without respect to party or body, and I think that group works extraordinarily well together. And so that I would amend it in the way I just
described earlier.
I'll tell
you what, the amendment does appear to be divisible. I don't hear that there's much concern about lines 1.4 to 1.6.
Right.
So perhaps we could vote on that part and then see what we want to do on 1.2 and 1.3.
Fine.
So would somebody wish to move 1.4 to 1.6 then? Senator Pappas moves 1.4 to 1.6. Discussion on that part of the amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. 1.4 to 1.6 adopted. Now we have before us 1.2 to 1.3. Senator Pappas moves.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kubley.
It would seem to me we need to lower the number then on 1.2 of the amendment from 14 to 10 instead of to 12.
No, but she's not moving my amendment.
Oh, she's not moving.
She's moving her amendment.
Okay.
And now I'm going to move to amend her.
Well, why don't we take a vote on Sarah Pappas's and see where it goes?
Okay.
Okay. All right. On 1.2 to 1.3, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail.
Division.
Okay. Division. All those in favor of 1.2 to 1.3, please raise your hands. Those opposed? Okay. Motion does not prevail. Okay. Sir Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I would move what I said before.
Modern,
essentially, each party appointed by the majority leader or the minority leader of each body. So it would be four. And so that would be the following, and the number would be 10. Right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and just clarifying, that would be also striking language requiring membership on the Finance Committee.
Yes.
Your amendment.
Okay, and we'll give Council instruction to make it fit. All those in favor of the rest motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Pappas, you
have
the
A7 amendment.
Okay. The A7 amendment. And the first line would have to be, line 1.2 would be changed in light of the previous amendment, but.
Right.
We're
adding, Mr. Chairman, with the A7 amendment, Senator Rummel would like to add a representative from the University of Minnesota.
Right.
So then I think we'd have to add up the numbers again. Probably it's 11 then.
Right. Line 1.2 would be changing it to 11. And then, okay. Discussion, Senator Rummel, did you have any thoughts on the A7 amendment?
I support the amendment, and it's something that's been suggested, and I think it's a good idea.
Okay, is there a discussion on the A7 amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails.
And I'd move the bill,
Mr.
Chairman, I did have a question, though, about what we're doing about the small costs. The cost is absorbed by the legislature. Is that for Dan?
Now it's even less.
It's even less, right.
Okay. We should also fix the effective date to make it effective immediately, I think, again, because if it goes on effect August 1st and they can't make the appointments. Okay, Senator Rest moves an immediate effective date. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rubble.
Apropos to the comment you made about people being in campaign mode, mm-hmm. I believe the bill has something about the first meeting must convene before September 1st or something like that. Should we change that date to?
Not if you expect them to get their work done. I wouldn't change it.
No, starting no later than September 1st. I think they got a lot of work done if they're going to get done by February 1st. Just get people who either aren't running for some safe districts who want to serve on this.
Point it till August.
Okay. And no primaries either.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator
Rummel, can't we get these people appointed earlier by August 1st?
I didn't. If it's possible.
I mean, it's only four legislative appointments, and everyone else probably, they know who their representative is going to be.
Make it July, then.
Yeah. No. Why don't we make it July?
It says no later than. They could still do it by then. It just says no later than August 1st.
Well, I think they're not going to do it. I think we should say July.
Senator Pappas?
I'll move that on 1.24 to delete August and put in July.
Senator Pappas moves on page 1, line 24, change August to July. Discussion on that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Then, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rummel, do you want to also start the work earlier, no later than August 1st on 2.5?
I think we should just leave it the way it is.
Leave it? Okay,
the primary is August 10th.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Okay, further discussion on the bill. Anybody want to be heard on the bill? Any motion?
I'll move the bill.
Senator Pappas moves the Senate file 2496 as amended be recommended pass. Discussion of that motion. Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Limmer, maybe you'll get appointed this task force.
Boy.
Mr. Chair and committee.
Thank you, Senator Rummel. Members, I'm trying to figure out what the House is up to.
Me too.
As of a few days ago, they absolutely had no interest in doing an omnibus bill. As of yesterday, they're going to do an omnibus bill. But I've got my bases covered. We can go either way. But at some point, we have to figure out what they're going to do. So stay tuned.
Do they have a vehicle?
All right.
Do you have a companion?
Got a vehicle?
We do.
We've got our vehicle. I mean, we did that at the last meeting.
So corresponding.
I mean, they can always make a match. You know. So, do we have any other bills in the pipeline?
None
that we're aware of. Okay. So. At this time, we're not planning any future meetings, so okay.
Does this mean, Mr. Chairman, that you're not doing an omnibus bill, or you are?
No, we did. At our last meeting,
I
assembled all the bills that had passed here and put them into one bill, so I've got an omnibus bill sitting in finance right now, so I could go either way with individual bills or an omnibus bill, and as of yesterday, the House wants to do an omnibus bill. So.
I guess I'm concerned that if I don't have a bill that matches up to the House, that...
Oh,
it won't happen.
The indexing people can make non-companions match up. That's not a problem. So, okay. Anything further, Senator Russ?
Mr. Chairman, if this is our last meeting, I want to thank you for your leadership of this committee. It's been a pleasure to serve with everybody, quite frankly, and want to thank the staff. They have been just superb to work with, and I appreciate them.
I want to thank all of you. Let's thank our staff and everybody else who's been with us. And with that, meeting is adjourned.
Okay. Maybe I should go with my bill that's already on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we have a
bill
that's
to
Sandy,
I will.
I put the word out that the reason why the House didn't want to do an omnibus bill is because Phyllis is afraid of me. She doesn't want to see me in conference. She fears me, so now she's going to do an omnibus bill, right?
This is all the stuff she couldn't get in the cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And I won that round. But now she's mad at me.
Well, I won it too.
I'm mad at you. Maybe let's switch parties.
I may have compromised in order to go to his daughter's wedding.
Right.
So now he's going to exact upon the flesh.
Well, people are suggesting you and I switch partners.
I know. I've heard that many times. So. I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if you'd fare any better.
Tommy's still mad at me.
About something else.
Yeah, it goes back about 12 years ago. I opposed the
purpose
down there.
Oh, still?
Yeah, I voted against it.
He still holds it against it. Oh,
get over it. I said, because Governor Perpich served two different non-consecutive terms. At first, the court was ugly. You know, I mean, with the mind behind him, I said, he deserves a second court. That was an issue for Tommy, and of course, Lola's down there right now. So
we know who won, so he should get over it.